Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
It's Cofield and Company.
Hour three, Stadium Swim. Willie Ramirez is the company. It's Cofield. Mateo's helping us out here in Cabana 24, poolside. I'll tell you what, Willie.
Tell me.
I saw one of those, as I dubbed it, the SS Snack Ship roll on by earlier. I mean, Motto. Come on now. It's actually called the SS Feast. And when you come out here to Stadium Swim, obviously you can get, you know, pretty much any drink you want, bottle service. We were out here on Sunday, so we got some of the drinkies and the collector cups and a few buckets of beer skis. We did not get the SS Feast, which serves 12 to 14. There's only four of us. As they call it, it is served on a luxurious mega yacht. It's a mini mega yacht. It includes lobster corn dogs, your choice of chicken brisket or vegetarian nachos, shrimp cocktail, a pile of sliders, beef and impossible sliders, if you're into that. And then what catches me is the stacks, I mean stacks of, as they're calling them, chicken fritters. I am a chicken finger, chicken tenderaholic. That thing just looks just scrumptious, and then crispy, seasoned fries, and fittingly on the SS Feast, a pool of dipping sauces. Come on!
A pool of dipping sauces.
A pool of dipping sauces.
If you were going to dive into literally a pool, one of those kiddie pools that they put, you know, you live in an apartment with a small patio, so you put a kiddie pool out on your patio. If you had a pool of dipping sauce, what are you jumping in?
Am I jumping in with like a bucket of chicken fingers with it?
Yeah, you're sitting in there with the food.
Oh, okay. This is quite the visual for the audience. It's not gross at all. I mean, I would probably go with some sort of buffalo sauce, some kind of red hot sauce for the chicken, but I mean, it depends on what I'm jumping into. If it has to be some beer cheese, let's get messy with some beer cheese. If it's got to be a pool of mustard, I'm in on that too. I'm not a ranch or blue cheese guy. I think there's a lot of people out there. I think most people would say I would jump in, they would jump into a pool of ranch.
I'm jumping in a pool of honey mustard.
It's a good choice. It's a good choice. We don't know. Griffin and I had a long discussion yesterday on stadium food pretzels.
Okay.
So we got into some dipping sauces yesterday.
There's only one. Let's not even have this conversation.
Griffin?
There's only one thing you're dipping a stadium pretzel in. I don't want to hear anything else.
Actually, Griffin's anti-pretzel. Or he wasn't that
That's
big
fine.
On
you
pretzels.
Can be anti-pretzel. That's fine. But if you're pro-pretzel, there's only one thing you should be getting for your pretzel.
No. I'm not anti-pretzel. I'm just under the assumption that pretzels are just they're not good enough. They're just too bland. There's no variety with a pretzel. It's cheese and then what? Hot sauce maybe? It's so basic. I can't be anti it when it's not complex enough for me to be anti it.
First of all, it's mustard.
Of course, yes.
It's not cheese.
It's cheese or mustard. Those are your two options.
No, I know. I just said what it is. It's one option. Look.
What do you weigh, 238? Do you even know how to eat?
I could eat five pretzels, but I still wouldn't be full because, again, that is not a good sit-down meal. It's not enough.
Yeah,
I need more.
It's definitely not a meal. I agree with Griffin. I mean,
let's get some, like, pepperonis on top of it, like a pizza style. Like, that'd be
pepperonis.
Actually pretty good.
You want the pretzel crust pizza.
So basically what he's saying is, like, instead of breadsticks or like pizza sticks type of thing or bagel bites, he would make pretzel bites. Like, you take your pretzel and you put a little mozzarella, maybe a little marinara. You wrap the pretzel with pepperoni, throw it in an air fryer. Get all nice and sizzling and gooey. A little dipping sauce. It's a nice pizza sauce.
Don't get too worked up. You're getting worked up. Calm down.
You know what that tells me? That you're getting worked up. You're salivating.
I am getting worked up a little bit. Let me take a swig of water. So we're just about set with our football schedule for the fall. We're going to be on the road on Thursdays like today here at Stadium Swimmer inside at Circus Sports. Next week, 99% sure we're actually on Radio Row as they do their ultimate contest weekend. Fridays, we're going to be at Treasure Island. Mondays, though, we're going to another island. We're going to be at Ellis Island, one of our favorite places in town, right there on Koval and Flamingo. And you got to see it now. The build-out they did there is unbelievable. Now, part of improving and adding to the property, they added a new sports book.
No.
They've got a new partner, and it's Boomer's Sportsbook.
It's
Joe Asher's back in the game. So Boomer's is over at Ellis Island. And I wanted to talk a little bit of hockey, but I actually want to talk some football and some betting with Gary Lawless. So Gary's up with Cofield and Company. Willie's here. It's Cofield. What's up, Gary?
Hey, Steve. Hey, Willie. How you guys doing?
Gary,
we're good. Apparently, we're hungry because we were just talking a lot of food. I don't know if you're hungry, but we're hungry.
Gary is the number one Winnipeg Blue Bomber guy, the go-to guy. When we need CFL talk, he is our guy.
I just actually bet on Boomer Sportsbook on the mobile app on tonight's Blue Bomber Ottawa Red Blacks game. I took the Bombers to win, and I took the over.
Nice. So you bet Winnipeg on the money line, not minus the points.
I bet Winnipeg to win minus the points.
Oh, minus and okay, then, so minus four and over 53.
Yeah, and then I took the over 53.
Nice. Very good. How are you, Garrett?
What happened?
We're not in season. It's right around the corner, but it seems like every time we've looked up, it's almost like the NFL here in Las Vegas. You know, we've gotten used to this since the Raiders arrived, where we really didn't talk about much and we had some off months. But I'm learning that, you know, you're very few and far between days off, months off in when it comes to hockey. There's always something to talk about.
Yeah, well, you know, school has started, so all the players that have kids are back in Vegas.
Yeah.
And once the guys are in Vegas, they have this facility that's at their disposal. So there's guys skating every day right now. The players' parking lot is half full. There are players working out, guys taking advantage of the ice that's out there, and pretty soon Mark Stone will show up. His kids aren't school-aged yet, but once he shows up, pretty much once Mark Stone steps on the ice, you better be here. There's not many guys that aren't allowed to be on the ice once the captain is out there, and the captain's gates are pretty good here in Vegas.
Speaking with Gary Lawless, Vegas Golden Knights. All right, Gary, let me just pick it up and dispose of the 745-pound elephant in the city. Jack Eichel's enjoying his off time. He's been on vacation. I talked to him for a phone interview. He had just done a camp up in the Northeast. He was doing the charity golf tournament with Bruce Cassidy, that he does every year in Boston. The guy's getting married. He's just enjoying time. Leon Draisaitl didn't sign until September. Last year, we saw him sign a record contract. And I know you can't get into detail. You're part of the organization. But the bottom line is everybody just needs to settle down. The organization worked their tails off to get this guy here. He brought a Stanley Cup. Can you explain why it's just everybody needs to take a step back and relax?
Well, first of all, there's all kinds of time. Like, it doesn't have to be done before the season starts.
Right.
And they've got till July 1st. They've got almost a year. They've got 11 months before a deal has to be done.
Exactly.
So lots of breathing room. I don't expect it to take that long. I expect Kelly and Jack to, well, it's not Jack, it's his agent, Pat Brisson. And you know what? Like, this is a really quiet time for hockey people, for management. This is the one kind of window that agents and managers get where there's nothing super pressing. So there's not a lot of business getting done right now, but I would expect it to pick up, you know, early September.
Right.
But again, it doesn't have to happen then. The bottom line is Jack wants to be here. The Golden Knights want him to be here. They've got cap space. They need to find something that works for both sides. It has to be fair for Jack. Jack's got to be, he's one of the best players in the world, so he's got to be paid like that. The Golden Knights are here to win Stanley Cups, so there needs to be some flexibility cap-wise so that Kelly McCrimmon can still maneuver. Jack understands that. Kelly understands it from Jack's perspective. They'll get a deal done.
Right. And we had to get that out of the way so we can move on. But sure. I 100% know it. And like I said, I didn't want to put you on the spot. I know you're part of the organization. But I'm like, I'm tired of reading the different blogs, the different alerts, the different this. When's it going to get done? Everyone just relax. Let's talk about some exciting stuff. And I know that you know better than a lot of us. You've seen him play probably as a youngster when he came up and then going into Toronto. And now he's here. Mitch Marner, how excited are games, call games, see him, and what should the fans be excited about?
Well, he's one of the best players in the world, so that's right off the bat. That should make you happy. I was asked earlier today, the Golden Knights are doing their 25-hour ticket push down at T-Mobile Arena, and Ashley Weiss and I were doing a live stream, and I was asked about, you know, what about Mitch? And he's a wizard. That to me is the best way to kind of describe him. He sees the ice better than you know, there's only a few players that see the ice the way he does. He is highly skilled. The guy that's played on his line, Austin Matthews, has put up, you know, 60 goal seasons playing with Mitch. Mitch was the most productive player in his 9 years with the Leafs. He had more regular season points than any other player and more playoff points than any other player. And for whatever reason, Toronto decided they didn't want to sign him. Their loss, Vegas is gained. This guy, people are going to absolutely love him. He's going to wear number 93, which is the number of his hero, Doug Gilmore. And Dougie was a great player. And just like Mitch, you know, Mitch is great offensively. He's one of the best defensive forwards in the NHL. He is, I can't say enough about him. Here's how I'll sum this up for you. Stone, Eichel, Pietrangelo, Cassidy. Those are the four biggest, most important acquisitions in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights. You can put Mitch Marner right in that with that group. He joins that group to round it out as five of the most important players Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee have acquired.
Gary Lawless up on Cofield and Company. So we mentioned you're working with Boomers. So what do you know about Boomers? Yeah. What's your hook with them? You know Joe Asher. They had a really nice rollout a couple weeks ago at Ellis Island. It's very cool to see him get into the game.
Yeah, so Joe obviously was a big player in that industry. He's in the Sports Betting Hall of Fame. He happens to be a friend of mine. He's a great guy. He asked me if I would get involved as in a spokesperson role, and I'm excited to do that. It's a really cool product. It's entirely independent, which it's not. This isn't here. They're not here for the shareholder. They're here for the customer. It's going to be great pricing. They're going to have all kinds of really good features. Right now, if you sign up, $250 deposit, you get $250 in match bets, which is really neat. I've been kind of fooling around with it, doing some baseball parlays, and you know, every time I bet, it takes a little bit of that bonus money. So I've been a loser a couple of times, and it hasn't hurt as much as it would if it was just your own straight cold cash. And they got a huge announcement coming up on what they're going to be doing with pro football. It's going to be very attractive to the customer.
Gary Lawless. Yeah, Boomers, as you mentioned, the 250 initial deposit match is massive. So go check it out. Download the app. I downloaded the app. It's competitive with every other, you know, good app in the city of Las Vegas. And it's just a Nevada book. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned baseball, because I reference Bill Foley as the guy who puts pressure on every organization, sports organization in this town, because Bill is ultra competitive. If, say, John Fisher called Gary Lawless and said, hey, you know, Gary, what is it like? Like, what are the demands of the fans in Las Vegas? What would you tell the A's owner, John Fisher?
Well, you know, our ownership and our fans are aligned. where the Golden Knights are concerned. The fans want a winner, and obviously Bill wants a winner, and that's everything that the organization has been aimed at winning games, winning playoff games, and ultimately winning the Stanley Cup. So, listen, if you want to come here and lose, I don't think the people of Las Vegas are going to put up with it. They want a team that wants to win, and you don't hear any excuses from the Golden Knights that things happen. You're not going to. There's 31 other teams that want to win, but when the Golden Knights don't win, actions are taken. Like last year, they got knocked out in the second round. Kelly McCrimmon, the biggest free agent available, is Mitch Marner. Kelly McCrimmon trades for him before free agency so he can isolate him and be the only one, have an exclusive window where he's the only one that can sign him, and he gets it done. He gave away a really good player in Nick Waugh to make that happen, but you can't argue the Golden Knights are better today than they were prior to that trade.
Damn, preseason up in about 5 weeks. The other thing I wanted to mention is the way Bill and the organization kind of market to not just Vegas and the state of Nevada, but a region, and they make sure to get out on the road. What do they got cooking for the preseason this time around to kind of market to the whole region?
Well, we've already done it. We went out, Shane Knighty and I, and a busload of our marketing staff and our game cast. We went to Reno and to Lake Tahoe and did some clinics up there and met a bunch of our fans. And then Dave Gosher and Dan Duva, they jumped on another bus and they went out to Arizona, where our games, you can hear our games on radio and watch on the Scripps Sports Network there as well. So, and they met with a bunch of people. They don't have an NHL team in Arizona anymore, and the Golden Knights are happy to step in and try and be the team for the people of Arizona. So we've done a bunch of that. And then, yeah, preseason is coming up soon, and our games will be on TV. It's an opportunity for us to show people what the season is going to be like and what our team is going to be like. And someone asked me today, what are you excited about at the start of the season? The promise. To me, this is another opportunity for the Vegas Golden Knights to win the Stanley Cup. I think this is going to be a really good team, and you can't control injuries, and there's a bunch of stuff that can happen, but if this team is healthy, they're going to be a contender.
Gary Lawless of the Golden Knights, you hear him on the games with Dan Duva on the radio. Also, you see him on the broadcast, the Law and Order between periods. Gary, one thing I want to talk about with the Golden Knights since day one is its outreach in the community. And we all know about October 1. That speaks for itself. But I'm talking about going out to the community, the ballpark rinks. We've seen different members. Zach Whitecloud's been very, very proactive. But one of the biggest things we've seen is the increase in numbers when it comes to youth hockey, from hundreds to thousands, and now the high school hockey league, in which the Golden Knights have gotten behind. Can you speak to its influence and how you've seen, since you've been here in, 7-8 years, the growth of youth hockey in this town from little kids to now high school?
Well, my daughter started with Learn to Skate. Then she moved into Learn to Play. She's played all across the city. She's played for the Junior Golden Knights. She's played for the Las Vegas Storm. This year, she's playing for her high school at Faith Lutheran. Hockey's exploded here. Yeah. This is it is one of the number one cities in the United States for hockey now. And think about it. There's an ECHL team in Reno, Tahoe. You've got the Henderson Silver Knights, an American League team, playing out of Lee's Family Forum, and you got the Vegas Golden Knights playing out of T-Mobile Arena and City National Arena and America First Arena over in Henderson. Those arenas are jammed. It gets if you're an old guy and you want to play beer league, it's tough to find ice. The kids have really monopolized, and it's there's great opportunity to play in house league, but there's also a lot of competitive travel hockey taking place here. One of the girls' team won the national championship 2 years ago, coached by Gordy Mark, who played in the NHL, played for the Thunder at the end of his career, and stayed in Vegas. And actually, it's really cool. All those, you know, Rod Buskus, Jeff Sharples, Gordy Mark, all these guys that played for the Thunder and stayed in town and made Vegas their home. They're kind of the pioneers of hockey in this community, and have taught a lot of young people. But right now, it's well organized. Both programs are excellent. I'm talking about the Storm and the Junior Golden Knights, and then Gorman has high school hockey as well as Faith Lutheran. I can only speak about the Faith Lutheran program. They've got a varsity team, they've got a Division II team, and now they got a junior varsity team, and hopefully they're going to have a girls team too soon as well. My daughter's playing on the JV team with a bunch of boys, her and a couple other girls. So it's pretty amazing what's happened here in a very short time.
Great stuff, Gary. Real quick, before we let you go, let us know what you got coming up or what the fans can look forward to in terms of what you're teaming up with Ashley and Shane and everybody, the whole broadcast crew, in terms of as we get ready for the season, what can they look forward to?
Well, I've been trying to do a little bit of writing. I did a piece on Jack Eichel a couple weeks ago.
Great piece. Saw it.
He's donated $279,000. To the Best Buddies program.
Yep.
Since he got here as a player. Talked to Riley Smith last week, and we'll continue to do pieces over the next little while. So there'll be a lot of written work. And then, you know, once Media Day comes and rolls along, Ashley and the rest of us on the broadcast crew will start to pop up on your social media quite a bit. So lots going on with the Golden Knights. And you guys mentioned Ellis Island. Download the Boomers mobile app, sign up, go down to Ellis Island, and if you're in Vegas, if you're in Henderson, you can go to Casino Valle Verde and get authenticated, put your money down, and have some fun with the Boomers app, and please bet responsibly.
Gary, come out to Monday Night Football. Willie and I are going to be there every Monday, and we'll get you some pork belly bites and maybe some bread pudding.
I love the front yard there. That restaurant is fantastic. So
that's the deal.
Count on me coming down there for sure. I'd love to come and do a show with you guys. Count me in.
Yes. All right,
we'll see you, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
There it is, Gary Lawless, one of the voices with VGK as the offseason winding down here. First exhibition game, preseason game is September 21st. First home preseason game is September 23rd.
Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
Stadium Swim, watching some baseball. Phillies up 2-1. Jesus Lombardo just coming out of the game after throwing 6-plus. 2-1 Phillies on top of the Nationals, Mets, and Braves after a slugfest last night. I think it was 17 runs. That one's top six. 1-1. Willie, I'll give you an example of a story that, if it's real, which I question if it is, will be viral, but also of much interest to TV talking heads. I saw a note yesterday, and again, I'm always hesitant to jump in on these things because I think a lot of times they're fake stories, but that there were some Vikings season ticket holders who were canceling because the Vikings are adding some male cheerleaders to their cheer squad. And now there's stories out that there may be about 12 organizations that are going to do the same thing. I understand the way people get mad. I'm going to say on the front end of this, I don't really understand why they're mad, because male cheerleaders are commonplace all around college sports.
There's only one reason why anybody should be mad, and that anybody should be a population of women. But there's only one reason why. Do you know why that reason is?
No.
If they are opening the door for male cheerleaders to join NFL cheer squads, and it's taking away from the count, meaning if they say, okay, there's the Raiderettes, I'm guessing there's 40, I don't know. I'm trying to look at them and picture them, 10, 20, 30, 40, like in the lines. So if there's 40 of them, and there's now going to be 50 because they're going to add 10 men, okay. But if they're taking 10 away and making 30 women and 10, then I think that that's the only people that should be mad, is because it's taking away from the women that have had all these opportunities for all these years. Otherwise, who cares?
Well, on this post from, it's a tweet from Complex, says that 12 franchises prepping to add male cheerleaders: Vikings, Ravens, Rams, Saints, Eagles, Niners, Patriots, Titans, Colts, Chiefs, Buccaneers, Panthers. The two photos they use are one in a Vikings uniform, which almost looks like a Vikings cheer outfit, almost looks like a Halloween costume. And then there's another guy in a Falcons outfit. Now, I've seen, there's differences in what cheerleaders are going to do in a cheer squad, not to get too hardcore here, but a lot of times the male cheerleaders in college are kind of the power elements.
The base.
Throwing the women in the air, yeah. Helping them do the flips, catching them.
Right.
What is wrong with some male dudes dancing? Are we anti-Rebel Girls and Company? Because they've had male dancers in their dance squad for probably 5 years.
Yeah, Rebel Girls, the first time they won the national championship years ago, it was all women, and they eventually opened it up there. That's the dance group, though. Well, I guess, NFL cheerleaders should be considered more. They're a sort of a combination of cheer and dance. But the Rebel Girls were once all girls. They added males to their mix. It's probably 80% still girls. I have no problem with it. Like you said, I mean, they're trained. That's why they're doing it, is to add more of a cheer element, because you can call them cheerleaders, but the reality is, I think NFL dance teams are different than college cheerleaders. You're seeing the stunt teams, what they call the stunts, right? There's the base, there's the flyer in college, and these competition teams. That's why in college we see cheer teams come out, and then we see the Rebel Girls come out. I think we have a combination of that. Maybe they're trying to add a little bit more of a cheer element from a competition sense. So you have that base, right? You have the male as the base or to throw the flyer. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it's a bad idea at all. Again, unless it's taking away from, the openings that they had for the women.
It'll take off, though. You watch the next week or so.
It'll be big.
It's going to take off.
Oh, the story, yeah. The story.
Some of the comments on it: how about just watch the football game if you're upset? Another person: the camera's not even on them enough to be upset. Y'all just insecure if you're mad about this.
Right.
But there's going to be an avalanche on the other side of people complaining. So what are you going to do? Although someone says the Saints have had male cheerleaders for years, this is nothing new. All right. There you go.
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to have that immediate backlash, but then what's eventually going to happen is the cities, the NFL markets that don't include it, now it's going to be like, well, how come you didn't do it?
Yeah, I gotta see that before I believe it. I think it's going to be the opposite. I think will any of the 12 teams back off adding male cheerleaders? Possibly. I think that's more likely than people getting guff for not having
on
the cheer squad.
No, I said after that dies out. No, that's going to hit first. There's no doubt about it. I'm not saying that. And I don't mean like this season. Like next week it'll be this. Next week it'll be that. I'm saying over the course of time, once it's dead and gone, because as we know, these storylines, they go away. The next will be how come the ones that didn't add it. And there'll be complaints.
What was the joint scrimmage like in general, joint practice like today in general with the Niners and the Raiders?
My whole take as a whole, Steve, was that the 49ers, they went at it as best as they could, but sort of in a very cautionary manner because they're so banged up. I don't think that we got... I don't want to say that they sort of half-assed it, but what I want to say is that they looked as if they were very careful about their approach. We couldn't see, I couldn't at least, a lot of the offense when they when their first team was going, because all of their players, instead of going on the sideline, they went across the field. So they were almost blocking what you could see, even though we're not allowed to film. The Raiders don't do that. They were on the sideline, so we could see that. Geno was okay. I don't want to say he was great, but I do think there were some one-on-one drills where they looked a lot better. The Raiders were amped up. They were fired up, like I said, and I mentioned earlier, they were the antagonist. They were trying to get under the 49ers' skins. The 49ers held their cool. If you ask me who won the practice, I'm going to say the Raiders, but I also think that the 49ers were a little subdued. Kyle Shanahan, poured water on it and saying that he wanted his guys to keep their cool, focus on the task at hand. And the Raiders did that for the most part. You could just tell that they were talking their smack. They're in their place. Their fans are chirping. So on the whole, I just don't know if we got everything out of the 49ers or that Shanahan and his staff did. I don't know about we, but only because they were so banged up. And then you look over and another guy goes down. So that was my whole take as a whole from it. In that the Raiders won the practice. Now what do you do in the game on Saturday is the question. What are we going to see?
Here's Pete Carroll post scrimmage, post joint practice with the Niners, just talking about joint practices in general. SNFE 291. How about we try Pete Carroll on the Niners-Raiders rivalry? I wonder how much he knows about it going back.
Well, did you grow up in the Bay Area? You said that like you grew up in the Bay Area also. No, that's not what you meant though, right?
No, okay.
Yeah, it's always been something. It has always, since I was, 14 or whatever the heck when they got going with the Raiders, my family was Niner fans. Whole family grew up in San Francisco and all that. It's always just been a natural rivalry. I've never had it like the Raiders were the bad guys or the Niners were the bad guys. I liked both teams growing up. So to have a chance to do this, it's kind of fun. And to play them in this preseason, kind of fun. I like it.
What just happened there? Wait a second. He liked both teams.
Is that possible? Can you do that?
I don't think so. But, there are some fans like that. Huh. Okay. I think it's weird. What do you think? Can you do it in a market with two teams? Can you root for both teams?
I don't know because it's sort of like saying you can like the Jets and the Giants. It's like, sort of like saying you could like the Yankees and the Mets. You really can't. Even though they're not in the same league, they're not in the same division. I mean, you just can't.
It's actually the fans almost make it impossible to do it because they're into the rivalry. They talk so much stuff, you're going to pick a side. It just becomes a situation where they're sort of insufferable. All right, quick time out. We'll get to the grab bag. We're live here at Circa Las Vegas Stadium Swim.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
All right, Mets and Atlanta exchange a couple runs, 2-2. That one's in the bottom of the sixth now. And the Phillies blew the lead. The Penn blew the lead. So now a 3-2 game. Nats lead the Phillies, top of the eighth. If you haven't seen this guy, Jose Ferrer, yes, there's a pitcher named Jose Ferrer. Watch him, lefty. Just electric stuff, 97 and 99 miles an hour. That's some of the baseball going on right now. Interesting story from Ralph Russo. He's now with the Athletic. I thought he was AP. I guess he switched.
He abandoned.
Say it again?
He abandoned AP.
Oh, he abandoned. Posed the question. These are good talking, debate points. Is Texas college football's new Alabama? And it probably should say, can Texas be college football's new Alabama? Because I think to be the new Alabama, you'd need to be in the midst of multiple national titles, a run. What do you think of this? We'll go with, can Texas be college football's new Alabama?
Well, you have something else on here that Griffin sent in that for a couple of years, Georgia, right? Colin Coward asked, when Georgia made their run. So wouldn't Texas be the new Georgia?
No.
Oh, okay. So we're setting the standard that no matter what, in 5 years, 10 years, this year, it's always going to be the next Alabama?
Yes.
Okay. Then Texas can be the next Alabama. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, the reason Alabama is used as the benchmark is that for Nick Saban's program from 2009, I think this is what everyone's trying to live up to.
Yeah.
And what Colin said was that Georgia already hasn't, which I think it's a little early on Georgia to say they haven't, because they, you know, they fell short last year. They also had quarterback issues. Carson Beck got hurt. They had to mix in a new quarterback in Gunnar Stockton. But Alabama from 2009 to 2020, their run was incredible. It's Nick Saban. His run was incredible.
Hmm.
They won six national titles.
Okay.
And Nick Saban went 151-15.
That's
so
good.
Think about what we're asking you to do now. Is there going to be a program in college football that over the course of 12 seasons will win half the national titles and go 151-15? 151-15. I don't think it can happen. I think it's almost impossible. So my answer to Ralph Russo, and this is what he wants, so I'm buying into the troll here, is that will never happen again.
I don't think it'll ever happen again, but can Texas be the next dominant team like Alabama? Yes. I just don't know if it's going to match what Alabama did, if that makes sense.
Griffin?
I actually think, you know, seeing this article right off the bat, it was, my initial reaction was the same as you guys right now, which is basically like, really? Like, we're already trying to compare Texas to the dynasty of Alabama. But, I mean, hey, what happens this year if Arch Manning is everything that has been promised to us and more? Goes on, wins a Heisman, they make a deep run in the college football playoff. And you know, to be considered the next Alabama, like you said, Steve, you gotta win titles. You can't. I don't care making a title game. Forget that. You gotta win multiple of those things. You gotta have multiple natties. So right now, absolutely not. But if they have a great year this year, Arch Manning goes off, defense keeps rolling like they did last year, I could see it. I could see a dynasty, a little dynasty happening down there.
A little dynasty. But here's the thing: there are two reasons why this will never happen again, and it's the reason why Alabama was knocked off its perch. One is NIL, and two is the transfer portal.
Yep.
So,
you read my mind. That's where I was going, and this is something I predicted about 5 years ago, and I got laughed at, and I told everyone NIL and the portal was going to change college football, and the top of the game would not be as dominant. Now, they may be in the mix every year, but they're not going to win every national title because for the longest time, those, and you could probably rotate, you know, in some different schools in the mix, but let's say generally there were 12 to 15 top schools. They were all cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the schools below that were afraid to cheat or did it a little bit because the 15 were mostly hands-off for the NCAA, and those outside the 15, top 15, were like, well, we can't do it. Now, there is no such thing as cheating. It has been legalized. So now you've got all these new schools that are coming to the table and like, hey, we always had money. But we knew we couldn't get away with it, like Alabama and Georgia, and go back to other SEC dominant programs, Florida, LSU, Pete Carroll's USC, you know, Texas, when they were at an elite level, and certainly with Vince Young, they were at an elite level. The game has changed. Now there are, you know, 50 or 60 schools that can have a payroll with their football program. My guess is, oh, I don't have all the NIL numbers, and we're not going to have those for a long time, because I don't think they're going to be made public, but I would venture to guess there are at least, oh, I'll say 60 programs, Willie, that have at least $1 million in payroll for a roster. There's probably 35 that have at least $5 million. That can buy you a lot in terms of football, and it's also makes you more attractive to anyone who's not playing at Alabama and Texas and USC and Ohio State. You can't keep any depth anymore.
Is that why it's important at some point, no matter who it may be, may it be a union, maybe be the NCAA, but are we eventually going to see that sort of quote-unquote salary cap?
Well, technically we have one, but because of collectives, you can spend well beyond the $20.5
right.
million. Now, in reality, I mean, I would think on the books, most football programs, the highest ones are going to be at like 16.5 of the $20.5 million, but there's too much player movement. There's too much money for players to be rewarded at other schools. I don't think that's a bad thing. If I were a college football player, I might have some loyalty for a little bit, but the handwriting is on the wall. If your coach recruits you and then keeps trying to stay old and getting old by going into the portal, and you're never going to get a chance at that stop. I want to play. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's why there's going to be a lot of schools like in that 10 to 25 range every year. I think Arizona State's a great example. Arizona State is going to be able to recruit at a high level and get transfers. Arizona State's a hell of a school to go to in terms of fun. But there's a lot of schools out there that are like have been the next level below that have a payroll, have support. It's a cool place to go, and you get to play. So the dominance, I know the playoff last year was kind of, you know, lopsided, but it's going to even out, man. So I don't – to go to the beginning of the conversation, I don't think Texas can go on a dominant run. Kalen DeBoer is screwed. He's never going to be able to meet the standards that Nick Saban set. And, Willie, look at Texas. Here's another prime example of this. Arch Manning is going to be there for how long?
2 years max.
That's what his family's saying. If Arch Manning goes out, as you guys said earlier, has a monster year, say Texas does win the national championship, Arch is in the Heisman race, and then in the NFL, the number one pick goes to the New Orleans Saints. He ain't staying 2 years.
Manning legacy at New Orleans, huh?
Yeah,
that's a storybook if I've ever heard one. Jeez.
Yep. And then how do you – I mean, is there a possibility that Texas can replenish a quarterback, whether it's recruiting or in the portal, every single year? I guess it's possible. But let's see this year, Willie, right? We've got the top three teams are Arch Manning, who's had a little playing time. Ohio State has Julian Sain leading the way. He's barely played. He's in from Alabama. And Dante Moore has barely played, and he's on the number three team or two team, in Oregon. This new quarterback thing every year, especially if you're young, that's hard to win. 6 national titles in 12 years and go 151 and 15?
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's a standard.
It's going to be damn near impossible.
I mean, I would almost want to say, you know, instead of what if we rephrase it to, does Texas have the best chances to become the next Alabama out of all the schools right in the SEC?
I think if we lower expectations and we say, can Texas be a program that wins multiple national titles over the next 10 years, the next 7 years? Sure it can, yeah.
How about this? In terms of what we're saying here, right? Like 2 and 3 years, 3 and 4. How about this? In this perspective, the way the Chiefs are looked at in the NFL right now in terms of getting to the Super Bowl, winning X amount in what they've accomplished, can Texas be that? Instead of saying, can Texas do what Alabama did, 6 and 12, can Texas be the next Chiefs of the NFL in college football, just being the dominant force in getting there and winning a few? Is that a better...
Possibly. You know, I'm downgrading Ohio State. Keep in mind, Ryan Day to start his career at Ohio State is 70-10. It's not 151-15, but 70-10 is pretty good. But, you know, on the Mahomes example and the Chiefs example, you know, these NFL quarterbacks, you draft them, you re-sign them, you might have them for 13, 15 years. Best you're going to do in college football now is get a 2-year run with a quarterback. And hell, Georgia probably thought, hey, Carson Beck is going to be here 3 years. You know, things went kerplooey, and then he went off to another school. So, like, it's hard to even keep the guys who are winning a national title or super successful. They get injured. Things go south. It gets crazy. So, I'm looking forward to it, man. College football in less than 9 days. You ready? I can't wait.
Ready to make some bets.
I can't wait. Ready? I actually heard... Go ahead, Willie.
No, I was just... Dinner bets, even though we still have 3 sitting out there.
Yes, let's get some. I actually heard a good interview. We'll try to get the guy on. A dude from On3 said Week 0 is really exciting because there are multiple CFP possible teams playing Week 0. And he mentioned the Iowa State-Kansas State game. And then he said, don't forget, UNLV is playing. So UNLV getting a little attention, and they're They're about 6th or 7th on the odds board to make the CFP. Thanks to Circa for housing the show. Thanks to all our great guests today, Vic Tafer and Gary Lawless and Xavier Pope. Willie, great job. Mateo, good job working in the heat out here. Thanks to Griffin. See you, Willie.